Good afternoon. Thank you for joining our May 27th CMS COVID-19 call with nursing homes. This is Alina Chekai leading stakeholder engagement on COVID-19 in the Office of CMS Administrator Seema Verma. Today we are joined by CMS leaders, CDC leaders, as well as providers in the field who have offered to share best practices with you all. I'd first like to turn it over to Jean Moody-Williams, Acting Director at the Center for Clinical Standards and Quality, for an update on the agency's latest guidance in response to COVID-19. Jean, over to you.
Thank you, and hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in. And as always, I want to stop and thank you for the work that you're doing, those of you on the call, those of you and your staff that are working each day to keep residents safe, and the challenges that I know are being faced with also family members who are having a difficult time. I call your attention again to our website, in which we have posted a number of new guidances over the past couple of weeks. In particular, of course, we have the reopening guidance that's available as you begin to make decisions or work with your state and community leaders about making decisions. And we'd like to at some point hear about your thought processes as you're working through. So let us know either during the Q&A process, or if you want to volunteer to share some of your best practices, we are open to volunteers as well. So I also wanted to let you know, in addition to the guidances that we provide, we have support available through our quality improvement organizations, and probably nearly everyone on this line at one point or another has received some kind of technical assistance support from quality improvement organizations. And they're going to be hosting a series on infection control in nursing homes, and they'll be doing this on Thursdays of each week for the next 8 weeks. The capacity is limited, but please go on and register on their website, which is qioprogram.org. Again, qioprogram.org. And the trainings will be recorded, so if you missed the live ones, you can catch it at that time. Also, of course, we want to just thank you and appreciate all the nursing homes that have begun to report through the NHSN system. You are doing a wonderful job, those of you that have started to report. I know that we continue to have some that are in need of reporting, and we are in the process now of receiving that data from the CDC, doing analysis, and as noted, we will be posting that at some point in the future. This is a reminder that you are requested to report at least once a week. You can do it more often than that, but at least once a week. And if you haven't started, please begin as soon as possible. As a reminder, the first reports were due on May 17th, the second on May 24th. The third report period, which is coming up, would be May 31st by 11:59 p.m., after which time, if you have not reported, you will receive correspondence from us. And on the fourth reporting period would be June 7th, and at that time we will be looking at enforcement. So just wanted to remind you of that, and again, thank you for all you're doing. Now, with that, I will stop, and as always, a pleasure to have Dr. Namali Stone from the CDC to give us a few words from the, and then we have a wonderful guest speaker, and then we'll have time for questions. So, Dr. Stone?
Thank you so much, Jean, and let me echo our appreciation and gratitude for all of you that are out there in the trenches taking care of your residents, families, and your staff. I had the opportunity to deploy last week and took a couple of colleagues with me to meet and learn from a group of nursing home providers around a region of a neighboring state. And I just wanted to say that being able to sit down and listen to the teams who are struggling with and doing everything in their power to keep their residents and their staff safe despite constraints in PPE supplies or access to testing or delayed turnaround, all of which are very real challenges to the work you're trying to do when it comes to managing COVID and preparing. It was incredibly valuable for us, and I just wanted to acknowledge how amazing the work has been and the innovations that we saw in terms of overcoming those hurdles. But this opportunity was entirely as a result of a collaboration we had with the State Health Department, the State Nursing Home Association, and the Quinn QIO that was working in that state. And those three partners together really facilitated our introduction to the nursing home providers, gave us an opportunity to get to know and offer what supports we could bring, and for them to volunteer their time if they were interested in having a visit and a discussion with us. And I just think that all of you should take advantage of the state HAIAR programs in your health departments along with your Quinn QIOs. Those two groups often work together. And in one area in particular that I know is a very hot topic right now with NHSN, the Quinn QIOs have tremendous experience supporting nursing homes with NHSN enrollment and reporting. So I would recommend that if you have some centers or you are struggling with that in any way, to consider reaching out to them, because they have great resources and can support you. Thanks so much, Jean. Appreciate the chance to share a little bit of that experience.
Thank you for that. And it's always good to hear from the field, and we appreciate that. And so with that, I'm really pleased to welcome our guest speaker for today, and that is Vicki Hendricks. She's the administrator of the Callaway Good Life Center in Callaway, Nebraska. So I'll turn it to you, Vicki.
Well, thank you for that. And I want to thank everybody that participates and makes these calls available to us. Thanks to Leading Age for keeping us aware of when these are so that we can share our information. And with that, I will just tell a little bit about what happened in our facility. On April 4th, our world in this little skilled nursing facility took an abrupt turn. Our first positive case of COVID-19 was upon us, followed 2 days later by a second positive. Immediate testing of the remainder of our 32 residents was initiated, resulting in 10 more positives. The victory was 19 negative residents in our facility. Immediate conversations were held with ICAP and epidemiologists, among many others in Nebraska. Dr. Ashroff and Kate Tyner of Nebraska ICAP were essential members of our initial team. Following their agreement with our plans, we began moving the positive residents to a location off-site, which was possible with more teamwork involving our medical director, CEO of our local hospital, and the CEO of the receiving hospital. With guidance from ICAP, we were able to develop a map for our facility, outlining hot, warm, and cold zones, which we mapped as red, yellow, and green. Red zones depicted where COVID-positive residents would reside. Yellow areas were for residents that had been exposed to a positive person but may have been asymptomatic and tested negative. And the green zones housed residents that had not been directly exposed. But in reality, we treated our entire green zone as if it were in the yellow zone, wearing appropriate PPE, including N95 masks, gowns, gloves, and even face shields where they were appropriate throughout the building, until we were assured through testing and time that the virus had not spread to another area in the building. We have three main halls that make up our 24 rooms, which house up to 35 residents. Our census at the time of the outbreak was 34. All of our positive residents were found in the South Hall. The rooms near the south entrance in this hall were designated as the red zone, as they were near an exit. The rooms to the north end of that hall were mapped as the yellow zone. The three residents that tested negative on that hall were moved to the rooms in the yellow zone, leaving the red zone open for any residents that tested positive moving forward. No residents were moved from the yellow zone to the green zone, keeping that area uncontaminated. Designated staffing was used on the red and yellow zones to eliminate crossing into the green zone. Proper donning and doffing of PPE was essential at this time between the zones to prevent the spread of the virus. Following proper decontamination and an appropriate time lapse, our red and yellow zones were changed to fit our needs. Eight of the positive COVID residents returned to our facility following a two-week stay at the hospital, and they were still testing positive. So they were housed in our west wing, which had now become our new red zone. The important part in this is to set up your facility in a way that keeps exposure to the lowest degree and helps to preserve PPE. Graphing this out on a facility map gives the best visual to your staff, and posting signs on the door to areas stating what PPE are to be used in that zone has been most beneficial. This has been a time that we could never have imagined. A roller coaster of emotions, changing plans hour to hour, not day to day, not week to week, but hour to hour, all taking its toll on the staff, residents, and the families. Sadly, we lost four of our elders, but we celebrated the victories of those that were spared. The zoning, planning, and training were all effective, as no further positives have been found past the initial outbreak. Teamwork, that is the only way we can survive this. So if you have any questions, I'm open to that.
Thank you so much, Vicki, for sharing how you were able to, I mean, you really strategically determined how to provide care during the challenges of COVID, and obviously had the residents at the center of your thought process, but for sure the staff as well. And so, again, I thank you for all that you are doing and that you have done throughout this entire period. With that, operator, I'd like to open up for questions. We do have some subject matter experts from CMS, as well as if you have any questions for Vicki, please give instructions. Operator?
Yes, and ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone. For our first question, For our first question, it's from Kimberly Yamaro from Belmont Health. Kimberly, your line is open.
Hi. Just because the line's been so quiet, I just wanted to say thank you very much for the guest today and really applaud her facility's example of immediately testing all remaining residents. I think that really proved to be a winning point in your particular experience with COVID.
I have to say that was key because most of those residents, well, eight of those residents had no symptoms at the time. We would not have known they were positive for a while if we had not tested.
Thank you for that comment. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, we do have one more.
Okay.
For the participants, press star 1, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Honor Crisco. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Hi, thank you for having us on. I have a question about reopening the centers. And about relaxing some of the visitation to provide our residents with some psychosocial opportunities. And one of the things that was in some recent CDC guidance was some outdoor visitation with social distancing and proper source control. Is that something that is acceptable under the current status of nursing home visitation closures?
So I'll first turn to Dr. Stone to address the CDC guidelines and then see if Evan has anything to add. Namali?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for bringing up that question. You know, we have heard from providers the toll that the restrictions, not just from visitors, but even just the room restrictions are having on residents and their mental health and their functional well-being. And we are very supportive of centers that are in, you know, in a circumstance where there's not a problem with COVID transmission. There's, you know, a safe way to use appropriate precautions, like putting a cloth face covering on the resident when they're walking out of their room into a hall to go outside, having the right amount of staff to be safe, you know, in their transit, and having a plan and process in place for their ability to either just be outside or maybe be outside and have a visit with family from, you know, a safe distance, at least 6 feet, where the family is also wearing a protective face covering. We are supportive of that and think that providers should have, you know, put thought into where could that be done safely? How would you organize it so that it's not overwhelming in terms of staff time, or, you know, families get a chance to, like, schedule those visits, et cetera. But from our perspective, that is a very reasonable thing to do. And, you know, if a center feels comfortable that COVID is not spreading right now in the building. Over.
Great. Thank you for that. And I know that as you look at our guidance, I think that is the important key of being able to know the status, which includes the what we've recommended is the initial testing, so that you do know the status, and then the subsequent testing as in the guidance. And then I'll turn to Evan to see if you want to add anything.
Thanks, Gina. Hi, everyone. This is Evan Shulman. It's from the Division of Nursing Homes. And I agree with everything Namali said, that we really do want to do whatever we can to bring families together. I think I would encourage you to dialogue with your state on this, as these were state recommendations. But, you know, if it can be done safely and, again, in collaboration with the state, then I think it makes sense. Obviously, there's a lot of other factors that you're going to want to consider. If you're a facility that has a lot of COVID inside of it, then this may not be something for you. If you're and certainly you wouldn't want all of your residents to be having visitors outside at the same time. So I think that this is something that we're going to want to look at and see if we can update our guidance with, because it's an important part of bringing families together. But absent that, I'd encourage you to reach out to your state. But also, with all of our guidance, we're not going to be able to describe every type of scenario. And, you know, compassionate care can mean different things. And, you know, in the guidance, we say, for example, end-of-life situations. So there are other situations that could qualify as compassionate care. What's important is that the residents are kept safe, and that there is no transmission of COVID-19 because of the actions that the facility may be taking. So there's a lot of factors to consider here. I think these are all things that we've been wondering throughout all of this, and would encourage you to dialogue with your state. And we will also take a look at this to see if there's something that we could put out as well.
So just to clarify, am I hearing you say from the CMS perspective that it's not a green light based on the center's self-assessment that it has to be blessed by the state?
Well, the recommendations that we put out were recommendations for states. So states have been putting out their own guidelines on how to reopen different types of businesses. We can all agree that nursing homes are a very different type of business than a lot of the other businesses that have guidance for reopening. So this is for the guidance we put out is for states. At the same time, CMS is looking at this and see what other types of guidance we could put out. I think that in certain situations, it can certainly be done safely. In other situations, it may not be recommended, depending on multiple factors. So I think, you know, right now our guidance is for states. If we can come out with some additional guidance on that, we'd be happy to, and we're looking at that right now. So don't have a definitive yes or no for you right now, just that our reopening guidance was intended for states on how to manage reopening within their state.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, great question. Thank you. I think we have time maybe for one more, if there's anyone in the queue.
Yes, we do have more. It's from Melissa Montgomery from the WDONC. Your line's open.
Hello, are you there?
Hi, yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, that was me. I'm not sure if they're on mute. Okay. Operator, is there another question?
Yes, we do have several more. And for our next question, it's from Anthony Burgesses from the Tutorial Living. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I appreciate the CMS guidance on how to open nursing homes. That's fantastic. However, I have questions as far as how, who's helping, and with what tests, and more importantly, who's paying for the tests. I know it's up to the states, and I respect that, but I'll be really honest. It's called the Wild Wild Test. There's no answers here, and I'm pretty much shooting blanks. Could use a little help, maybe a little bit more structured information or definition.
Great, thank you for the question. And there's not one answer for that question. It has multiple. Yeah. So, and we are actually getting some additional guidance on that as well. But Evan, I'll see if you have anything that you want to say now related to that. And you've acknowledged that portions of this, obviously, CMS does not pay for staff testing, for example. And I know that some states are working with nursing homes. But other things, Evan, you want to add to that?
Just a quick follow-up clarifying question. What could you ask specifically what your question is about testing again?
I'm the chief medical officer for a chain of nursing homes. I represent 75 buildings in 10 states, right? So we have 10 different versions of what's going to happen. And so we have multiple patients and employees who need to be tested. So the point prevalence survey, I get that. But then what about the weekly testing and then the testing to make sure that the building is completely clear? All of our state health departments, local health departments, everyone's operating on different framework or ways. And I'm having trouble. And I know, you know, it comes from you guys as far as how to and then for them to interpret what to do. And that's the problem. There's no clear way. I know this is very vague questioning, but I'm just trying to get some answer.
And I don't know if Dr. Stone can jump in too. I didn't mean to just put it to Evan, but anyone who has any any clarifying.
You know, Jean, thanks. Hey, it's Namali. And I'll just say that what you're raising is a really important point that many providers are struggling with right now, and that is the circumstance that a particular facility might be in should be considered in as part of the decision about deploying these large-scale testing efforts. For example, the value of doing a snapshot of all the residents in a building that's already had a known very large-scale outbreak of COVID, it may not be quite as valuable because we have to ask the question, well, what are we going to do differently at this point with that data? On the other hand, a center that has just recently had a COVID exposure from either a resident or a healthcare personnel, a staff member, there is tremendous value in doing a large testing of the residents and healthcare workers to see who else might have been infected or exposed at the same time, and how do we then quickly move those positive people into their own space away from the people who are negative. So I think there are nuances to the way these testing strategies are deployed that may be part of what you're getting at. And I also understand that many states are doing this differently. So for providers who have centers across the country or even in a region, but across several states, you may be getting very different guidance for your centers depending on where you are. So just want to acknowledge what you're saying and appreciate the points you're raising. We are trying to think about other ways to clarify how this approach could differ based on the circumstance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And we are at time, and thank you for joining this call. And thank you so much, Vicki, for sharing with us and others on the line. Let me turn back to Alina to close us out.
Thank you, Jean, and thanks, everyone, for joining our call today. We hope that you'll join us for our CMS COVID-19 office hours next Tuesday, June 2nd at 5 p.m. Eastern for technical Q&A with our CMS subject matter experts. And in the meantime, you can continue to direct your questions to covid-19@cms.hhs.gov. Again, we appreciate all that you're doing for nursing home residents and their families around the country as we address COVID-19 as a nation. This concludes today's call. Have a great rest of your day.